Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca, Mesut Ozil. Alexis en el descuento ha marcado el Arsenal, como viene siendo habitual esta temporada. Gol de Alexis, 1-0 Arsenal.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, joined by international singing sensation James from Gunnerblog. Good morning.
Good morning.
I heard you won X Factor too.
I did. I won X Factor.
And Britain's Got Talent.
And British Sports Personality of the Year.
Yeah, well, there was some outcry over that, I believe.
People felt it was wrong, but I mean, to be honest, I feel I deserved it.
Well, certainly over Rory McIlroy.
Definitely over him.
You know, in terms of the curls, yours are far preferable to his.
what little I have left, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, we're trying to record this. We're having a few issues technical wise this morning, but we're gonna bash on through. And obviously, we're gonna talk about Newcastle. But in an Arscast Extra, first we are going to react live to the Champions League draw, which is coming up very shortly. So we'll let out gasps of exasperation, I suppose, in a few minutes.
That's it, yeah. I've been looking at the probability odds of who we draw. It took me a while to get my head around that. I would have just assumed it was sort of fairly random, you know. Mm-hmm. But someone has actually calculated odds, and apparently we have a 24% chance of drawing Bayern Munich.
Why is that? Why are we more likely to draw Munich than Barcelona or Real Madrid, for example?
This is a great question. I could only assume that it's to do with who can't draw who. So in some way, like if certain balls were to come out at certain times, it would increase the chances of getting others.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot that can happen when certain balls come out at certain times.
There can be consequences.
There's certainly consequences, and people should bear that in mind.
Indeed, yeah.
Right, well, look, let's deal with that as and when it happens. But for now, let's look back on last Saturday and a 4-1 win, a second 4-1 win in a week, which is nice.
Yeah, I can get used to that.
Definitely. Good performance overall. I know there was a little bit of, I suppose, trepidation when they got one back just after we'd gone 3-1 up, and there were shades of Anderlecht, I guess, for certain people. But it didn't really feel like that to me. It felt like we were much more in control of the game on Saturday, and some interesting and very positive performances too. Olivier Giroud with two fantastic goals.
Yeah, brilliant goals, weren't they? I thought he was excellent. It's no coincidence that he looks so much better when he's complimented by players who have skills that he doesn't, namely speed. You know, I just think that we're seeing the best of him, really, and it's quite exciting. I mean, it's odd, though, because you think back to Stoke and there was that horrendous miss, wasn't there?
Yeah.
And then he gets arguably a harder chance against Newcastle, puts it in the top corner. I suppose that's Giroud to a T. He's, you know, he's got lots of ability, but doesn't always deliver it consistently.
Yeah. And it's an interesting front trio. I noticed that you PSG versus Chelsea is what's happening in the Champions League draw. That's
okay.
Interesting.
Yeah. I would have quite liked PSG, I have to say.
Yeah. Yeah, no. That would have been, but could we draw? We couldn't draw them, could we?
Oh no, probably not.
No,
Barcelona won the group.
Yeah,
so it was always a wistful, futile hope.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, there were. Yeah. What were we talking about?
We were talking about Giroud and the front three.
Oh yeah, you wrote a nice piece on Gunnerblog about that trio and the movement and the way that it can affect the way that we play as a forward outlet. I mean, it is interesting because the varying qualities of the three of them. You've got the pace and the creativity of Alexis. You've got the focal point, the hold-up play of Giroud. Welbeck, his almost like a combination of the two of them together. It's interesting, and I think is showing signs that it could be really, really effective.
Yeah, I thought it was quite promising against West Brom, to be honest.
Man City versus Barcelona, so that rules out Barcelona.
Oh, sorry, man.
Yeah, I was really hoping for that.
I know you were holding out hope for that one. That was more likely than PSG.
Yeah.
Monaco's the one we want if we want to get through.
Yes, I'd take that.
The front three, I thought they were encouraging signs against West Brom, and I was a little bit disappointed that they didn't play together in the following two games. And something I touched on in the piece that you mentioned is something that really excites me is when the ball's wide, invariably we now have more than one man in the box to aim for.
Yeah.
And just that combination of movement, you know, Welbeck's got such desire to get in there alongside Giroud, it gives the defenders so much more to worry about, and I think contributes to the fact that we started scoring goals from crosses. And I think it's a really promising combination. And also, just given all the injury problems we've got, it's sort of the best we've got available at present.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it as well, that trio is nice. And I think everybody would agree that that's a trio with real potential. But then you've got to add Theo Walcott in there, and you've got to add Mesut Ozil when he comes back in. Bayer Leverkusen versus Atletico Madrid, that's another one gone for Arsenal, so we can't get Atletico. But yeah, talking about Walcott and Mesut Ozil to come back in, for all our problems at the back, going forward we do look in good shape.
Yeah, we do. And people say, well, how would you fit Walcott in? I think, you know, he kind of becomes competition for Danny Welbeck in that kind of wide striking role. And I think, you know, that'll be a good contest because they both offer different things to the team. I think Welbeck's got a more physical presence, probably works hard defensively. Walcott, on pass form, is more clinical. So it's nice to have those alternatives hopefully coming up soon. And it is exciting, isn't it, to imagine what Ozil might do behind that front three because there is real pace in it.
Santi Cazorla, while we're talking about Mesut Ozil, obviously Santi Cazorla is filling that creative role, that kind of number 10 role. And he's had a difficult enough season in the sense that the end product hasn't necessarily been there because, you know, he's played quite well, but he hasn't got on the score sheet. He seems to have found his range again in the last couple of games.
Yeah, 3-2. And before that, he was racking up the assists as well. I think Cazorla's playing extremely well. And when I say it's exciting to have Ozil back, I don't think Ozil will walk into the starting 11 by any means. It's interesting because at the start of the season, I think we were getting questions about, is Cazorla's time with Arsenal up? You know, it's hard to see how he fits into the team. And now, you know, he's turned 30 and we're seeing him sort of come back to somewhere near his best. I think that probably tells you something about the squad, that, you know, there will be times where players are seemingly out of favour. You wonder how they're ever going to find a run in the team. But injuries or chance means that they get that opportunity. And there is a depth of quality there, particularly in midfield.
Schalke versus Real Madrid. So that's Real Madrid out.
Well, that's
so
something.
That leaves us with Monaco, Porto and Bayern Munich.
Yeah.
So yeah,
I'm saying nothing. those odds have just gone up, though, haven't they?
They really have.
Oh dear. So yeah, I think Cazorla's doing terrifically well. What a couple of goals he scored as well. I thought that first goal was absolutely superb.
Yeah, I mean, he could have gone down, couldn't he, over the when he ran into the box and took the ball at almost full sprint. His first touch was fantastic, and he could have gone down over the defender. And
Bayern Munich are out.
Bayern Munich. Oh, they've
got Shakhtar.
Oh wow! Okay.
So Shakhtar, we are down.
So
we
it's Monaco
down
or Porto.
Also, well, that is a favourable draw, I'd have to say, given the options that we had at our disposal.
That
is
good.
One of those.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. I'm happy. We're just got to wait and see who we're going to get. It's got to be Monaco.
We're out. Arsenal. They've got our little bit of paper. I mean, obviously you'll already know the draw when you listen to this, but imagine that you didn't. This would be very dramatic.
The excitement of this is here we go.
Monaco or Porto.
Come on, one of them.
I think I'm marginally ahead of you in my telly.
Yeah, I'm not watching telly at all, so.
Okay. It's Monaco.
Monaco.
Yeah.
Right.
Fantastic. It was meant to be.
Wow.
That's great news. That is the best draw we could have had, I would say, for various reasons.
Yeah. That is good, actually. Because were they not were they not bought by a billion millionaire guy who then kind of got fed up with the whole thing?
Basically, yeah. I mean, they sold James Rodriguez to Real Madrid.
Oh, I thought you said they'd sold hammers. And I was thinking,
that's where they made their money.
Way yeah. to raise revenue, like if they had various hardware supplies at the stadium.
Yeah, well, that would be. It would be a strange club shop.
Yes. Do you have any fencing that I could buy?
But yeah, you're absolutely right. Because a couple of summers ago, well, in fact, this summer they sold Falcao, they sold James Rodriguez, and they didn't bring in anybody of that kind of calibre. Mm. They got Moutinho, I think, is their big star midfield. Berbatov, of course, is still there up front. But they've got a kind of ageing team, a few exciting young players. But they're not the force that they seemed like they were going to be. I think they scored 4 goals in their entire group stage and yet managed to win the group. So they must have a pretty solid defence. That's all I can say, really, based on that. But obviously there's the whole Arsene Wenger return to Monaco angle as well.
Yeah, that's good. That
should make for an interesting story.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any animosity or anything like that, is there? Even though, I mean, he was fired from there.
Indeed.
But yeah, I mean, obviously the regime, such as it is, has changed. And I'm sure that how many Monaco fans are there? 11?
Something like that.
Yeah, so I'm sure at least 7 of them will hold him in some esteem and welcome him back.
I have been to Monaco. It's a very strange place.
I've never been.
Right, yeah. It's kind of like, it feels like a film set, you know. It's none of it real. You sort of imagine that behind, that all the houses are just facades. And the shops, this won't surprise you, are quite expensive.
Yeah, there is a certain, you know, tax haven, rich people on their yachts-ness to Monaco.
Quality, so I'll say.
And, you know, successful as we are, I don't have my yacht there.
No, we keep them hidden, obviously. Mm.
It's not so much a yacht as an inflatable dinghy.
Dinghy's a good word, isn't it?
Dinghies are ace. They are.
Well, so, we've got that out of the way. We can sort of relax now. Well, that's it, Monaco, brilliant. Yeah. So we can crack on with this Newcastle business.
Yes. All right. Well, we were talking about Santi Cazorla, and one of the things that I know this is a symptom of the modern media and everything else, but the idea that the penalty that he took was in some way disrespectful. Yeah. Now, I know that who was it who said it? Carlo Cudicini, former Chelsea goalkeeper. And not very good at staying on his motorbike, bloke. He tweeted about it. And then apparently Robbie Earle on NBC also said it was disrespectful. And then Richard Keys said it was very disrespectful to do that against a young goalkeeper. And I was telling Mrs. Bloggs this on Sunday morning, and she said, well, obviously he would prefer if Cazorla had smashed it.
yeah.
And then I looked on Twitter, and pretty much everybody had made that joke anyway. So, but, you know, it's just ludicrous. Why is it when Pirlo does it, he is a handsome, bearded football god who is, bestowing on us great favour with his skill and coolness and balls the size of watermelons to do that. And Cazorla does it and it's disrespectful. Weird.
It's very weird. I mean, it's ridiculous, isn't it? And also moments like that, I think, warrant praise. You know, that, you know, footballers like Cazorla are there in part to entertain, and you know, he's producing something a little bit special. Also, I thought it was really telling in Richard Keyes's comment. He said, well, he didn't do that last week, and that's exactly the point, isn't it? He took a penalty in the Premier League a week ago. He knows that goalkeepers do their research. Arnick dived where Cazorla put the last penalty. So in some ways, he's just making an intelligent strategic choice to change what he does.
Yeah. I mean, it's a different kind of penalty, isn't it? When you're 3-1 up and there's only 2 minutes to go and you're 3-0 down and there's 25 minutes to go. I mean, it's a different kind of penalty. You've got to take it a different way, I think. The circumstances on Saturday allowed that kind of a penalty more than, obviously, the one at Stoke.
That's true, although we've seen some very risky penalties taken under very high stakes. You think of Lauren against Tottenham all those years ago, just rolling it down the middle, you know. Oh,
that is one of my favourite penalties of all time.
Yeah,
it really is. It really is. Because I was looking at it going, oh, shit, oh, straight down the middle. And the goalkeeper's going and he's going, ah, oh, fuck. And you can see him thinking, ah, if I just stood there, that was an awesome penalty.
And if that was disrespectful, I'm just glad about that, to be honest.
Well, I think, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it was a bizarre storm in a teacup, that whole thing. I thought it was a good penalty, and he scored two chips in the same game. Fair play to him.
That's true. I hadn't thought of that.
He was desperately gunning for a chipped hat trick, probably, and then stoppage time.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow, that would have been something, actually. A hat trick of chips. I wonder, has that ever been done?
I don't know. Carlos Vela, probably.
Yeah, probably. Hector Bellerin. Bellerin.
Okay, is that what we're going with?
No, Hector Bellerin. We'll just
do that. Okay, fine. I can't do it, if that is.
No, we'd sound ridiculous doing that. But Arsene Wenger said it's the first time he's seen him play without the handbrake, and he said, there's something there. So the next time somebody says, what is there there? We can say Arsene Wenger says there's something there, but it's in Hector Bellerin.
That's amazing. Is that the first time an individual has been referred to as having a handbrake?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Because obviously there's the collective handbrake that we like to play with many times.
Indeed, yeah.
But individual handbrakes, maybe that's what it is. Arsene is passing off the handbrake responsibility to individuals.
I didn't realise this. Yeah, I thought there's one sort of shared handbrake.
No, it seems everybody's got one now.
Okay. Okay.
So he played without his on. He's fast.
He was very good.
Yeah.
He was very good. I there was that run in the first half that caught the eye where it was sort of like roadrunner, wasn't it? He just picked the ball up and kept going and going. You thought he might just end up dribbling through the net at one point. Mm. But he played extremely well, and I think he deserves a lot of credit because he had actually had quite a difficult week. You know, he played at Stoke, didn't have a great game, actually came off at half time, and has shown a bit of character to come back from that. And I thought we saw what people are excited about with Bellerin. You know, I don't doubt he's got a lot to learn. I think that his marking was a little slack on the Newcastle goal on the set piece. But we saw the potential, and that is that he's got tremendous speed and propulsion going forward. He's got good dribbling ability, and he's pretty neat in the tackle. It's his tackle that set up the first goal, of course, for Olivier Giroud. So I thought really encouraging from him. And Mathieu Debuchy did a decent enough job at centre-half as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some questions coming in about the whole Debuchy thing, so we might wait.
Okay.
And touch on that when we get to the questions part of things. Wojciech Szczęsny, we had him to thank for keeping the scores at 1-1, and in a season where he hasn't necessarily played as well as he can, and there are various reasons for that, but one of the complaints was that he's not making saves that are important in games, in the context of a game, or keeping us ahead or winning us points. That was a very, very big save, or two big saves at 1-0, because given how fragile our confidence is, if we'd been pegged back to 1-1, you do have to worry a little bit about where the game might have gone or how we might have reacted to that, you know?
Well, of course, yeah. I mean, with Arsenal, you always worry when they concede that it's going to lead to more trouble. And I thought they were important saves. There were a couple of important moments. I mean, it's possible some referees might have given a penalty for a handball by Danny Welbeck.
Did you think that was a penalty?
Those ones are very hard. I'm not sure, to be honest. I mean, this referee had a bit of a stinker of a game again. We seem to be having all the luck with referees. I mean, this weekend, in fact, in the Premier League, the standard refereeing was pretty poor. I think it's something that we've spoken about before as being a real issue this season. Did I think that one was a penalty? I think it would have been harsh, but I've definitely seen them given. What did you think?
I thought it would have been very harsh. I mean, if it had been awarded to us, I would have been like, okay, I'll take it, of course. But, you know, we got a bit lucky there. But yeah, I mean, I think you're right about the referee as well. I mean, there was a very obvious Newcastle tactic, wasn't there? And that was to foul Alexis pretty much every time he got the ball. Mm. And I think it's becoming more and more of a tactic that teams are using because they view him as the danger man, which he obviously is. He's got the ability to create and to score. And, you know, even though he didn't score on Saturday, he still ended up with two assists. But perhaps then that's the beauty of having other players in your team who can score the goals, because we were for a while a bit reliant on him.
Yeah, I think that's why I found this maybe to be our best performance of the season, because we looked good going forward and it wasn't just down to him. And I think in the past when that's been the case, you know, that he has really stood out. But actually, although he played extremely well, it wasn't his best game by any stretch of the imagination. And yet we still had fluidity and a threat. And I think you've also got to credit him because you're right, he's received some real treatment from opposition defenders, but he doesn't seem to have let it affect him. If you think about Jose Reyes, for example, taking those kickings off the Neville brothers, you always felt like it inhibited him and it impacted upon his career in England. With Alexis, you just don't feel that's going to be the same kind of problem.
Yeah, true. All right, well, look, we're going to leave it there for part one. We're going to come back with part two and your questions right after this. All right, welcome back to the Arscast Extra, brought to you by our friends at Savile Rogue. That's savile-rogue.com, where you can get all the best hats and scarves and gloves and all kinds of things. You looked cold in your post game video the other day.
It was absolutely freezing.
You know what you need? Savile Rogue. Savile Rogue scarf and hat and stuff.
Yeah, that's a great idea, to be fair, yeah.
Arsblog14, that's the code you can use to get 10% off when you check out at savile-rogue.com. So, now is the time for your questions. We've just been sitting here looking at the Monaco squad, actually.
Our old friend Ricardo Carvalho, still there.
Like he is old now.
Yes. He's not our friend, but he is old, so that was half true, half sarcastic.
He's actually older than me.
Blimey.
Well, he's not, but it feels like he should be.
Yeah.
They have Jeremy Toulalan.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah. So they've got a bit of a squad sort of full of players we were linked with once upon a time.
Yeah, Kondogbia. We were linked with him.
Yes, we still get linked with him. I think he's one of those sort of mythical DMs that people are always wanting us to sign.
Mm-hmm. Lassina Traore.
The 6'8" totem pole of a forward.
Yes.
Who took the Premier League by storm last season.
Yeah.
In a different loan spell with Everton.
And Gilbert Scamfist, he's there too.
We've also been linked with their left back, actually, Kurzawa.
Have we?
Yeah. I saw it in a paper. I mean, there's a lot of nonsense at this time of year, but saying Gilles Grimondi had recommended him. But we've got left backs.
We've got a couple of those.
We've got a couple of those. So, but I sometimes wonder about Monreal. I wonder if... Maybe he'll head back to Spain in the next couple of years if he wants to play.
I'm just looking at him here on Wikipedia. He is quite a left-back looking left-back.
Yeah, he sort of fits our mould, does he?
Yeah. He's got that sort of Ashley Cole, Kieran Gibbs, Gael Clichy kind of thing going on for him.
Cool. Well, they've been fairly interchangeable. And, of course, Dimitar Berbatov, who we were linked with just last season.
Yeah. Imagine.
Well, there you go.
What crazy times we live in.
No, what we've learned from this is that we've been linked with all the players.
Everywhere.
Should we have a question?
Yeah, why not?
Okay. On the subject of French things, this is a question from Ethan McCarthy. He's at Zemcart. And he says, does Mathieu Flamini deserve a little more credit for his increased ability of late? He has been pretty solid.
I think there's been something said to him about his role. Because if you remember a few weeks back, we touched on it, I think, and there was this, he was talking about how he's been, the idea was to win the ball as high up the pitch as possible.
Yeah.
And I think that that's good when you've got your forward players doing that. When they're trying to win the ball high up the pitch, what you don't want is your deep-lying midfielder getting bypassed in the centre circle or further forward, because then obviously you get left exposed, and we saw the consequences of that perhaps at Swansea. But I think since then there has been something said that he has been positionally much more disciplined, and what's really noticeable is the passing stats. I think he was something like 95% pass completion against Newcastle. It was similar in the last couple of games, maybe not so much against Stoke, but in the games before that, he was much more disciplined with the ball. I think there were obviously issues with the way he was playing, and I think he's addressed a couple of those issues, whether it's on demand or whether he's sat down and had to think about it himself. But there's certainly a lot more discipline to him off the ball and with the ball. And I think that's a good thing. I think he's what Arsene Wenger perhaps has looked at is how important Mikel Arteta is to the team in the way that he maintains possession. And he's maybe asked Flamini to keep it a bit more simple with his passing, and I think we see that it can be effective. Obviously, I think in the long term, he's not the guy, but for now, when you're looking for players to step up and to improve a little bit, fair play, he's done that.
Yeah, I think he's performed much better in the last few games. At West Brom, I thought he was very good a couple of weeks ago, and against Newcastle too. It's important because previously when Arteta was out, we'd looked a real mess, hadn't we? And I think that just being that bit more sensible, which really is what Flamini's there to do. You know, he's not a player who... He's a player who has got some technical limitations, and I think recognising that and just keeping it sensible, probably the right way to go. So, yeah, happy to give him some credit, but like you, I probably wouldn't say he's showing that he's the answer in the long term at any stretch.
Yeah, all right. This is a question from James, who is at One Gold PL Trophy. And I've got a kind of a follow-up question to this as well. But in the very short term, he asks, if Debuchy and Chambers are available this weekend, which one goes at centre-back?
It's quite a tricky one there, you know.
Is it, though? You know, I go on, you go first.
Well, all I would say is that I feel like Chambers is a player who might be struggling a little at present, just from having played an awful lot of games in a very short period of time. Who I feel like he's effectively not in great form.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And then you've got that team who performed well against Newcastle, and there's a temptation to stick with that. My instinct would still be that he will come back in at centre-half alongside Mertesacker with Debuchy at right-back. And I think the real reason is because, as well as Bellerin's played, he'd be unlucky to be effectively dropped. But I do think that Debuchy, although he did well against Newcastle, wasn't enormously tested. And I don't think we can say with any confidence that he is a great centre-back.
Yeah,
we can't necessarily say that about Callum Chambers either, but he seems a more natural fit. So I think... I think he will come back in.
Yeah, that would be my thing. You know, it's way too early to make any kind of judgment about Debuchy at centre half because, you know, like you say, he wasn't hugely tested by Newcastle. And I think he is a very, very good right back. As promising as Bellerin is, you know, I think we've got to look at playing perhaps, you know, our best players in their best positions.
Hmm.
I mean, that goes with Debuchy at right back.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Chambers has... I just feel a little for Chambers because I feel like he's constantly being thrown into these big games. I'm sure he's not sad about it. I'm sure he's relishing it. But I feel like his development is being rushed in a way that might not necessarily be beneficial to him. But that's not something that we can address at present with the injuries we've got.
It's an interesting point, though, about Chambers' form. That wasn't necessarily something I'd considered.
Mm.
Because he started the season so well. And I think everybody, well, not necessarily that he raised expectations, but I think people were expecting a consistent level of performance, which is perhaps a little bit too much to expect from a young guy who's only 19, really playing his first season of full of first team football. I know he, you know, was in and out of the Southampton side a bit last season, but you know, here he's a first teamer.
Yeah.
And maybe he is struggling a little bit for form, but you know, who knows? The week off from his suspension might have helped.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you look at the balance of a back four, we're probably stronger with him in at present. So I expect him to start at Anfield.
Right. And my sort of follow-up question to this, and it was one that was asked by a lot of people. So apologies, I can't see it now. My Twitter's just too full of people going, yes, Monaco. But the question was, does Debuchy's display against Newcastle offset the need for a centre-half signing in January?
No, in a word, I would say. you know, I would be uneasy about a situation where you might have to play two from Monreal, Debussy and Chambers at centre-half because all of those players are more experienced at full-back. I still think that you're in a position whereby the only senior central defenders you have are Mertesacker and Koscielny. One of those players has a serious injury problem, and another one's in danger of developing one from playing an awful lot of games. So I think it doesn't assuage that need at all. Arsenal definitely need to go and get a centre-back in January.
Yes.
Would you be inclined to agree?
I would be inclined all over the place to agree with that, yeah.
Yeah. This is a good question, then. In response to that, this comes from Desmond, who's at Arsenal Tonight. He's a nocturnal tweeter. He says, do you think we'll sign someone early on in the transfer window, or will we have to wait till deadline day?
Yeah, there is the question, isn't it? I think the fact that we need a signing so urgently will...
Pressingly
even. Yes, there's a good word. Why didn't I use that? I think that will probably get the manager into the transfer market sooner than usual. I think it was interesting after the game against Newcastle, and he spoke about Koscielny being out for a couple of weeks. And that the need to do something about that in the transfer market was obvious. So you would like to think that under those circumstances, having tasked Brian McDermott and the scouts to find somebody, that the deal would be done as quickly as possible into January so you have that player available. Who the player is, where he comes from, how much he's going to cost, I don't have the faintest idea. No. You know, I think we spoke with Philippe Auclair about this on the Arscast on Friday. It's you need a player that can come in and do it now, who can slot into the team and not be fazed by what's going to come between now and May, because there's going to be a lot of pressure, a lot of big games. So, yeah, who it is, I just don't have a clue. But I would like to think that the Koscielny situation and the seriousness of it and the possible consequences of not bringing anybody in would mean we go in quickly.
Yeah, and it can be done. I remember a couple of years ago, Chelsea, it was a slightly different situation because he had a release clause, but they effectively did the Demba Ba deal in the week leading up to the opening of the window. And within a couple of days of opening, it was signed and sealed. And I think Arsenal need to be similarly proactive, try and get something on the table so that when that window opens, we can bring someone in as quickly as possible. Am I confident it'll pan out that way? Not remotely.
Yeah, I mean, there's what common sense and what we do in the transfer market are not good bedfellows.
They rarely go hand in hand.
No, yeah. They rarely do. This one comes from LL Cool A.
Oh, I was excited for a minute there.
Yeah, at Andy Jackson is his name.
Okay.
I'm having trouble speaking today. I don't know what the fucking problem is here. But Andy wants to know, do you think Arsenal's poor corner taking has anything to do with the sloped corners at the Emirates?
Pat Nevin, he of former Chelsea and Scottish teams fame, he has a theory about this, and he made a short film for the BBC about how modern corners are massively influenced by this phenomena. And he believes that the reason so many modern corners are ineffective is that there's not sufficient space for a corner taker to take a run up.
Right.
Now, as a, you know, he's a professional footballer. He can be a bit off the wall in his theories, but, and he actually sort of does a demonstration where he goes to a couple of Premier League grounds and shows he hasn't got room to actually get a decent run up and take the kick. Now, I can't off the top of my head remember what it looks like at the Emirates, how much space we have.
I think there's enough space because, you know, when you go from the corners, you know, obviously the stands are there, but there's certainly space for a run up.
But is there a slope?
Yeah, there's definitely a slope down.
I mean, you'd think it pretty extraordinary that clubs could overlook that.
Mm.
It must be something they consider. But there are certainly people who do support that theory. So maybe? I mean, it is difficult to explain that such technically gifted players don't seem able to lift the ball over the first man. I think that's a particularly pronounced problem with Arsenal, because at present we seem to be aiming quite a lot of our corners to the near post.
Yeah.
So inevitably, if they're going to get cleared, that will be where it is. And it nearly worked. Per Mertesacker nearly opened the scoring with that sort of goal on Saturday.
I wonder, do we, at the training ground, given our attention to detail, have a sloped bit going onto one of the pitches for corner practicing?
That is a really... I don't know if that was a sort of silly question.
No, it's a genuine question.
It's actually quite interesting, isn't it? Because I imagine not. London Colney, the training pitches, as far as I've seen, are flat. So there's not that kind of beveling to emulate what you get at the Emirates. That is actually a very good point. But then we all know that the other problem with our training ground pitches is that they're made of like a special turf that ensures all your players get injured.
Yes, it's called concrete.
Yeah. yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I actually think there's something to that, to be honest.
I do as well. Maybe we've stumbled upon something.
Yeah.
Let's email arsene.wenger.
LL Cool A should get the credit here.
Okay.
So what I suggest that LL Cool A does is put this question into rap
banner?
Form. No.
Okay.
And make a music video.
Well, that does go well, I've heard.
Yeah. So I believe.
Yeah, but that is really interesting. And maybe on the training ground, we should sort of, at the sides of the pitches, set up gladiator-style travelators that players have to fight their way up before they take the kick.
You know what the other thing is, though? I think the main issue is that the players don't practice them enough. That would be my thinking.
Don't practice the taking of them.
Yeah. Yeah, because you know why? Who's the best? If I was to ask you, who's the best corner taker that you can remember from the Premier League era?
I don't know, someone like Beckham, maybe.
Yeah. Like the quality and consistency of his delivery was astonishing, really.
Yeah.
He rarely put a corner in a bad place. Ball nearly always went where he wanted it to go, and that was down to him practicing. Because, you know, he knew that, you know, in terms of skill and tricks and all that, that wasn't his thing. And he had a talent for set pieces, obviously, but he made the most of that talent through sheer practice. You know, the stories that you heard about him taking free kicks, taking corners after training, et cetera, and did it all the way through his career. And I think that's, you know, we don't necessarily have a defined corner taker, do we? Alexis takes some, Cazorla takes some, Oxlade-Chamberlain takes some. You know, Van Persie used to take them a bit, but, you know,
Walcott's taking a few.
Yeah. I think they should just practice more.
There's a role to be had there, isn't there? There's a specialist role up for grabs. If you practice efficiently as an Arsenal player, you're pretty much guaranteed to be on the corners because no one we've got at present is delivering. So, yeah, maybe it is the thing. I mean, does that come from a manager making you practice that? Or is that from the individual? Is it, you know, did Beckham stay behind because he wanted to, you know?
Yeah.
Difficult to say.
Yeah. All right, let's have another one.
This is an important question.
Right, I'm beginning to think it's not.
It's from Dave at One Osguna, and he asks, and I really wonder how you're going to respond to this, Andrew, what exactly is it that you dislike so much about Phil Collins? John Terry, I understand, ...
Right.
So he seems to be saying, I understand John Terry, but what's Phil Collins ever done?
Does he understand John Terry as in he understands the man, or he understands my contempt for him?
He understands your contempt, I think. I think what we've done is we've stumbled across a man who feels conflicted because he loves both Arsenal and Phil Collins, and he needs you to explain to him why that's wrong.
Well, look, I would never tell anybody what they can and can't like. That's entirely up to him. And if he likes Phil Collins, then, you know, good for him. I only judge him very slightly on that.
Do you like Phil Collins, Andrew?
No, I don't. And the thing about it is there are a multitude of reasons that we could go into. But the main one is In the Air Tonight. That song.
Okay.
It makes me angry. Like really, really angry. And the drum bit. Remember the ad? There was a chocolate ad, wasn't there?
It was a gorilla.
A gorilla playing the drum. That made me so furious.
Not even that. Not even the sort of comic incongruity of a gorilla playing those drums could raise your spirits.
I felt like it was a slight on the whole gorilla nation.
Is that when you stopped eating chocolate?
Well, Cadbury's, yeah.
Yeah.
I moved over to Mars.
Sure.
And Reese's Pieces and things like that. But I thought that was, you know, humiliating for Gorillaz that he was made do that.
Do you just hate the song? Does it just
I hate the song, and I hate his voice, and I hate his stupid big round head, and he's also a Spurs fan, and he did You Can't Hurry Love. He did that song as well, didn't he?
I think
that
so,
that was
yeah.
it, and, you know, everything about him, he looks like a fucking tramp. Seriously. Looks like somebody who should be living under a bridge. And he's a rock star. Do you know what else annoyed me about him?
Mm-hmm.
Like at Live Aid, there was this great thing. Phil Collins is so great that he's going to fly from London to Philadelphia to be at both Live Aids. Fuck off. What a show off. Everyone else just got 10 minutes. Why should he get more?
He wanted to be in the air.
He wanted
that night.
Yeah, because I think he did it by Concorde, didn't he? And because Concorde was basically time travel or something. And,
yeah, it's banned now. It's too dangerous.
Yeah,
because I think if you like kill Hitler, it affects the rest of history or something like that.
That's exactly it. And he was on Live Aid twice. I mean, that's cruel and unusual punishment. So that's,
hopefully they weren't watching.
Yeah, but mostly it's down to In the Air Tonight, and all the other reasons. All of them.
Okay, it's good. I think it's important that we clear that up.
Have we? Do you think we've explained that to his satisfaction?
For newer readers, they'll be like, Phil Collins, where's that come from? Now we've solved the mystery.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think he's wonderful.
You do, personally?
No, I don't. Just
good, that's all right. I'd only judge you very slightly.
We can carry on doing this podcast.
Yeah, we can. We can still be just about friends.
Okay.
Right. Here's one from The Canon, Sam, The Canon. He said, a couple of other people asked this as well. See, I can't fucking speak today.
I don't know what's wrong. What is
I
it?
Don't
is
know
it
what...
the mention of Phil Collins?
I think it
nauseous.
Is. No, I'm fine now. I'm fine. He said, if you were involved in Arsenal's Secret Santa, who would you want and what would you get them?
Oh, Kim Everett asked this as well. I remember because I wrote it down.
Right.
So Secret Santa, as far as I understand, it works that you have to buy someone, one person, a present without them knowing who it's from. Is that correct?
Yes.
I see. I haven't got any friends, so I don't have, you know, a reference for this.
Well, that's good. It makes for a cheap Christmas, so.
It does indeed, yeah. No, I've still got family. You can't escape them.
Mm.
Who would I want and what would I get them? Players and staff?
Anyone. Let's throw it wide open. Players, staff, admin staff, web guys, whoever.
I would get... Oh. Now, look, it's January coming up, so I think I've got to do something that's going to help on the transfer side of things.
Mm.
I think I've got to get Dick Law something, haven't I? I've got to get him something that will enable him to do his business more efficiently. A file of fax?
Mm-hmm. Can you buy reputations?
No, you can't, sadly.
Oh, there's a trick.
We've got all the money in the world, but that we can't buy that.
Mm.
What else could I get him? He's got a lot of resources. He needs something that would make people take him seriously. When he turns up at a club, they need to know he means business. I'm going to buy him a bowler hat.
Dick Law's getting a bowler hat.
I just feel if you turned up to negotiate with Barcelona or Milan or Bayern, whoever it might be, if it was just Dick Law, they'd be like, forget it. We know who you are. If he turns up in a bowler hat, they'll think, hang on, this guy means business.
Does he also have a briefcase?
Yes.
Does he already have the briefcase, or has that got to be part of your present?
That might come with the present. And maybe like a sort of little Poirot-like moustache.
Mm.
I just feel that it would just add a certain authority to his transfer dealings that might help us out. It's one of those presents that's really for me.
Yeah, it is.
Do you know what I mean?
It is.
It's one
like
of those
getting somebody a film you want to watch or a game you want to play.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm always thinking of number one.
Yeah.
Very what about
selfless,
you?
Though. I don't know. What would I get and who would I get it for? I should have thought about this before I asked you.
Yeah, I know. I always make that mistake.
Yeah.
Alexis deserves a present. He's been a good boy.
He certainly has. What would we get him, though? Like,
I don't know. What would...
He has everything that he could possibly want.
Speed, skill.
Yeah. Nice
aggression.
Hair.
Yeah. Lovely hair.
I'd get Mertesacker or a puppy. That's what I'd do.
Oh, they'd be such good friends.
A German Shepherd puppy. They'd be friends for life. And when Koscielny was out, we could play the German Shepherd in central defence. Because they're very good at football.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and also, if you're buying a present for the Arsenal squad and you're not sure who it's going to go to, I think just buy hair product. They seem to get through an awful lot of that.
Yeah. Hair jizz. That's
it'll
what
be, it'll be very popular.
I had to do this once, actually, a Secret Santa thing in... when I worked in Spain, I was an English teacher and we worked in this school and you were given a name and they were having like an office Christmas party. And you were told, don't spend any more than €5 or whatever it was. And there was another teacher there, about the same age as me. And he was a very odd guy, very, very odd guy, who tried to tell us one day that yogurts were made from a fungus that you would get from sheep's vaginas. Honestly, he was a very odd guy, but he had this kind of beard, like kind of like a stripy type of beard. I don't know how to describe
it. Like a badger beard.
Yeah, but it was really fine lines. Like not big bushy kind of hipster.
Oh, in terms of how it was grown, and was it deliberately? Was it shaven into lines?
It was shaven into lines, but the lines were all fucking crooked and like weird. They weren't straight lines,
okay.
You know. So I got him a protractor set. So there was a ruler and a T square thing, and you know the triangle and the what was the little semicircle one that you got as well.
Compass?
No, but not a compass, but it was like a little plastic semicircle.
That's a protractor, isn't it?
Yeah, protractor and all that kind of stuff. And then I made up this little graphic that I put on the packaging of it, which on one side showed a guy with a really crooked beard. Mm. And on the other side, after using this, you get really straight beard.
I'm concerned about how this is going to go.
It didn't go down very well at all.
No?
He took considerable offence. To this, sitting in a bar after we'd had our Christmas drinks. And, you know, it was back in the day when a bottle of beer over there was about €1. So there was some beer taken and he expressed his disenchantment at the present that I got him.
He shouted, "Screw you, Andrew."
Yeah, he was like really unhappy.
I'm going to go and form the band Genesis. you haven't heard the last of me.
See what I've wreaked upon the world. It's terrible. So he went mad. And I told him to fuck off.
Wow, this sounds dangerous. I don't know if we should get involved in this whole Secret Santa business.
Well, look, we've decided on good presents for those involved, rather than one that was perhaps a little bit cheeky, but not worthy of the reaction that it got. That's my thinking.
Yeah, I think you're all right there.
Have you got one more?
Yeah, why not?
One more.
Let's have this one. This is from Rahul Karel, and he asks, we all know we need a strong presence in central mid... it's catching, Andrew, this problem of speaking. We all know we need a strong presence in central midfield. What do you feel about Moussa Sissoko?
I don't feel anything about him, really.
No.
I mean, I don't look at him and have feelings.
He doesn't move you.
No, and I don't know that he's necessarily the presence that we need. He's a good player and an exciting player, isn't he? When you see him do what he's doing for Newcastle this season,
But Felipe strikes Claire me, mentioned him, didn't he?
Yeah, he strikes me as perhaps somebody who could add something at the attacking end of the pitch rather than being the defensive rock that people are looking for. That would be my thinking.
I agree. I think, you know, I'm sure the papers will run with it in the next few weeks. And I heard Philippe on the Askcast saying he thinks there might be something there, but he doesn't strike me as a player we really necessarily need. I think of him as an attacking midfielder. He often plays wide in the front three for Newcastle, kind of like an Oxlade-Chamberlain type. So he's not the sort of midfielder we really need. I think that if a midfielder is targeted in January, it'll be someone who's much more defensive-minded.
Mm.
But as we've said before, I don't hold out. It's not something Arsene's talking about publicly, is it? Yeah. It's much more focused on the centre-back issue.
All right, I'm going to go with one more question very quickly before we go.
Okay.
It comes from FC Hoya, who wants to know, would you rather have flippers for arms or a condition where your nose never stops running?
I felt a bit like I've had that this week. Okay, nose never stops running or flippers for arms. What type of flippers are we talking here?
Like a dolphin's?
Like a dolphin's. So no opposable thumbs, no grippage.
Well, I mean, that's not to say you couldn't get hooks put on the end of them, or...
What kind of mad dolphins are you hanging out with?
No comment.
You don't like them either, do you?
No. No, I don't trust them one bit.
Imagine Phil Collins riding a dolphin.
I got entirely the wrong image in my mind there, James.
I know, I'm sorry about that. Didn't mean to inflict that upon you. You've got options with the dolphin because of the blowhole. What I was going to say was, I think I'm going for... I don't want flipper hands. I'll have the nose that runs.
Right, because you can always blow your nose.
Well, I'll just sort of have a hanky, like in the olden days. Do you have a handkerchief? Do you have like a cotton handkerchief?
No, I never quite... I always thought they were quite unhygienic.
They must be, surely.
You know, I mean, I got the why handkerchiefs existed, but in general, the idea that you would carry a snot-covered rag in your pocket just strikes me as a bit odd. So, no, I don't have a handkerchief or monogrammed Kleenex or anything.
No. But, you know, I would require one of those, but I'd definitely go for that. I don't want the flippers. I just feel like I'm on a hiding to nothing with that. I might be a better swimmer.
Yeah,
beyond
you could win an Olympic gold.
That's true. That's true, but I wouldn't be able to hold my medal.
It would be put around your neck. Nah. For you.
Nah. Yeah. Yeah. it's a nice image, but... I'm sticking with the nose. I'm trying to think if there's anything useful about the nose. I don't think there is, really.
No, you could always stick, earplugs or nose tampons up there.
Yeah, but I feel like when you took them out, there'd be a torrent.
Yeah.
And I feel like that would be worse. It's better just to keep it slow and steady.
Right.
Do you have a view?
I don't.
Okay.
No. I don't want either of those things.
Oh, shit. I forgot. Should have gone for that.
Should have. All right, we're going to leave it there for this one. We'll be back next Monday after the trip to Anfield.
Exciting times.
And I'll be here on Friday with the Arsecast. So until then, take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.